session number 20459, reel 19.
Captain Spencer, reel 19. How was it that you became ADC and personal secretary to the Governor of Borneo?
Well, at the time, I was in HQ ALSI in Singapore, and I had been trying to sell my job, which was basically to try and bring in people for some individual units spread across Southeast Asia, basically, who'd been put out a particular job. Now that the war had finished, they wanted to come back. And one of these people was somebody who I mentioned to you just in private, was running this force in Abyssinia. He was a tall man of about 6'3" at least anyway. And I was selling this, my job, though he didn't know what it was my job, saying, well, it was an independent command and it had advantages of this and good accommodation and so forth. After talking for about 10 minutes, he said, oh, come on, don't give me all this bull. What are you really after, you see? So I said, well, to tell you the truth, I'm trying to get somebody to take over my job because I've got possibly an offer to go to Hong Kong. And until I fill my job, I can't get out. He said, well, that's no problem over that. I'm on, I can't remember what particular D-mob group he was, but he was certainly well past the time. So he said, I can take over the job, and then if I want to get out, I've only got to apply for Python or whatever it was, and I'm away. So I said, well, that's a damn good, let's go and have a drink on this. So very briefly, we went to the local tangling club, and we were sitting at the bar, and an officer, a major, came in, sit at the bar, and he shouted for the barman and talked rather loudly and sort of was talking to us for some time. But he was a very bumptious bloke. And Bob, I'm sure his name was, again, talked to me. He said, you know, Tony, I can't stand majors. And this fellow got then even more, what's his name, and Bob turned around, picked him up with one hand on his chest and one on his trousers and took him over and threw him into the swimming pool. So, therefore, my job was now settled that I could do it. But at this particular time, I had previously served as the secretary to the resident commissioner in Seremban, and a request came through for me to go to Borneo to act as his ADC and private secretary. And tossed up between this and Hong Kong, I felt that possibly the option would be, I would like to be, Borneo fascinated me, so I thought it might be an interesting place to go. Obviously, it was going to be a fairly privileged position.
What would you have been doing if you'd gone to Hong Kong? What was the job there?
Well, it was to do, strangely enough, initially with the War Graves Commission. It was sort of trying to locate various graves in the various, but it was a major's job. And again, it seemed I wanted to see as much of the world as I could at this particular time. But the grading for the secretary's job was, again, officially a major's, an SO2. Mm. So, and since I knew Calder, and if I may say, I thought I could handle him, and it sounded quite an attractive proposition, we decided to do it. Arrangements came through to take a short Sunderland flying boat into Borneo. And there were a few other passengers, not so many. And as we flew along the coast of Sarawa and then Borneo, I was simply amazed by the beautiful colours of the seas and the bunches, and it seemed almost a totally unoccupied place. And we landed in Jesselton Harbour, and cruised up to fairly near the jetty when a boat came out to pick us up. And I was taken to the governor's residency, which was on a hill in Jesselton. But at this time, one of the particular features is that I bought my dog Ketru from Malaya, and I was told that there was a restriction on dogs coming into Borneo. But I said, well, the governor's wife is not going to be at all pleased, because this really was a present for her, which is something I thought of at the spur of the moment. I had known her, and she was a very pleasant woman by the name of Emma. So there was a bit of consultation about this, and it was decided that we would set up the quarantine station at government, at the resident commissioner's house. So that sorted out quite well. My task basically then was to arrange meetings, visits of VIPs, dinners, quite a amount of research work, and quite a lot of gophers, go for this or go for that. And so I settled into a government house at Jettleton, and had a nice small suite with my own room, a small sitting room, and a bathroom. And things proceeded really quite well. Borneo was a fascinating place, because the longest road at that time, I think, was something like 14 miles. The railway was probably something like 30 miles long, which ran basically along the coast from Jesselton to, I think it was a place called Beaufort. But most of the bridges were down. So what happened, we put a number of jeeps with their tires off on wheels, so that the goat, and then you ferry across the river and so forth and so on. The general country was very fascinating. It was so different to the others. Along the coast you had a lot of these houses on stilts going out into the road. So most of my time was really taken up with the various visits of various people. I think one particular visit was interesting. It was Sir Dennis Boyd, who was the admiral of CNC, I suppose it was the South China Seas or whatever the particular command was, came over with his wife and daughter Elizabeth. So we arranged a number of dinners at the house and visits to the limited area we could take them to. It's likely that his daughter Elizabeth was a very attractive girl, and I did on one occasion remark, said, isn't it funny, Tony, how we all seem to sit together when we're in a particular dinner somewhere. So that proved. But one of the particular features of this, that he was a very short fellow. It was almost a cartoon of an admiral and his wife, because she was a very tall woman, absolutely charming, but certainly quite big. And we on one occasion arranged for a race meeting. There was we've done quite a bit to the old racetrack, and it was still more or less intact. There was a very small stand and rails around it. And the idea was that the admiral and his retinue, outriders and cars, would come to the bottom of the hill from Jesselap, which was on a fork, and we had taken the Buick, which had a partition between front and rear, stationed to the left-hand fork, so that when we saw them coming down, we were going to lead them off to the racetrack, where we'd prepared a special entrance over a ditch where planks had been laid down to drive over. I was in the front with the driver. And suddenly, James Calder realized that he was not sitting on the right-hand side of the vehicle, so that he could sort of, he had his cocked hat on his left, and, you know, in full dress uniform. So he decided that he ought to change over to the other seat. So he said, "Emma, move over." He said, "No, I'm quite all right here, thank you very much." "Emma, please move over." So this alteration was going on, and when I looked into the back, he was sort of almost crouching up, trying to force his bottom between her and the far seat to push her over. At that particular time, of course, Dennis Boyd and his retinue came past, and of course we were too late to get in front of them. So that, "Joe, follow them quickly," tore down the road, and they'd of course gone on quite some way. At the last moment, as we came to where we should have turned off, we were going to still following Sir Dennis Boyd. He said, no, left into the so-and-so. So we leapt this, we didn't quite go, so we leapt the ditch with everybody hitting the roof, drive to the main stand very slowly, like the Queen or another race meeting. And then, of course, had to rescue Sir Dennis Boyd. For this meeting, I had done it before, we had some fairly domestic water buffaloes, and against naval personnel or any visiting unit of what's name, there weren't that many of them, mostly naval personnel, I used to challenge for them to pick three people to ride these buffaloes on the race meeting, which was always very popular. We obviously had practice. I picked out two other people who were pretty proficient at this, at least staying on the back of the animal. The technique was to, we had a rope halter in the mouth and with a little bit of a bit so that it could hold in their mouth. And you then, no saddles or anything else like that, you then had its tail, which you held very tightly, so you had a fore and aft security. And of course the animals were being totally, at least three people to each animal before it went off. When everything was ready, it was three sailors and three of us. A gun would go off, the animals were released. Well, invariably they head straight for the rails, maybe into the crowd or into the field somewhere. With any luck, three or four would go down the track. The winner of the race was the person that was still on their animal and had gone the first round the track. I don't think ever did we actually get round the track. But in each occasion, our team managed to win. Either one of us at least had survived.
What sort of speed could these things get up?
Well, I would say that when they were really going, it must have been something like 30 miles an hour, I should think. I mean, I can't obviously estimate it, but it certainly was pretty tight. There were other things that we would have sort of cricket matches with them. For one particular occasion, I'd had some experience of hiring various people to come to Government House. And I'd heard of a group of Doosan dancers, a troop of Doosan dancers, and I went to see them and they performed. Some of the costumes were rather like Carmen Miranda's, but a very tall, lithe head of the group. And the dancing was, I think, their arm movements of the girls, and I think is all very thing. Government House was fairly lucky in the sense that it had what was originally a tennis lawn, although tennis wasn't funded, but quite a long steep bank going, so it was an ideal amphitheater for these sort of ventures. I'd arranged for a number of stall holders, kebab, you know, charcoal kebab things and various goodies being provided. And on this particular occasion, a number of the ordinary seamen were allowed there, and there was special seating for the hobnobs on the side of this, looking at it. But I'd had a word with the principal leader of the dancers, and I said that there was a very important man and his wife coming, and they'd expressed an interest in taking part at some very briefly a part of the dancing. So would he perhaps come up and ask them? I didn't say anything to Calder because I'm sure he wouldn't have liked it at all. And so they performed extremely well and had a great reception. And sort of at a semi-interview, I went down and said, right, so-and-so. So he came up speaking in Malay to the Sir Dennis Boyd. And James Calder, Malay was not that good, but he understood what he was saying. And he was saying, no. And I said, oh, no, you know, they'd be a bit offended, I said to the Admiral. And the Admiral said, no, that's fine, you don't mind Jesse, do you? And he said, no. So anyway, the two of them went down the steps to the what's name, and she put on this quite large headdress, and the two of them danced. I really took my hat off because it absolutely brought the house down, the cheering that went on. And in the end, all the dancers were going around clapping as well. What's her name? The governor was absolutely furious, but I said, well, I don't see why. I mean, what a success it was. So that amused me very much. But to cater in that way, where you're not having to pay anything yourself, I think makes that sort of do quite interesting. So normally one would have, you know, 10 or 12 to dinner. But there's another occasion, I think, that warrants mention, is that we arranged a meeting for Malcolm MacDonald, who was then the High Commissioner for that area. And he was having the meeting of all the governors of the surrounding territory, which included Singapore, Sarawa, somewhere else. So Andrew Clark was Sarawa. Sir Ralph Holmes was Singapore. There were a couple of other people, but Malcolm MacDonald. I thought he was quite an amazing man. At these meetings, we used to have stenographers there. And covering a vast range of subjects to do with the rubber and the teak and the wood and this sort of thing. And various people would get up and mention various things. And what particularly amazed me was the absolute incredible memory of Malcolm MacDonald. Somebody would make a remark and Mum would say, well, hold a moment. You said so and so. Oh, no, sir, no, sir. No, I said so. I said, I don't think you did. I think what you said was this. Oh, no, I don't think so. He said, well, hold on, struggle. Will you go back to this? And what's the name? And invariably, he'd got almost the exact words that this fellow had said. He was a great party man, too. And one of his particular tricks was to stand on his hands, and a glass would be on the floor, and he'd pick up the glass with his teeth and pick it up and drink it as he went on. He made a number of trips over there. On a particular occasion, we were throwing quite a large party at Government House, and the governor called her for some reason, was very delayed. So people were queuing up down the drive. And Sir Malcolm Donald came and said, well, Tony, come on in, you know, we can't hold all these people. Introduce me to them, you know. And so they all started coming forward. And obviously, it's Lucas, I knew all the names quite well. And as each came through, there was a particular fellow called, I think, Robin Black, who was the Attorney General, who, I don't think he liked me very much, but I thought he was a really bombastic bastard. I really disliked him. He was a really, nothing. So when he came up to the line, I said, excuse me, could you tell me what your name is? He said, you bloody well know what my name is. I said, I'm terribly sorry, but I should do, I know. And I just said, could you tell me what the name is? So anyway, he shouted his name out. And he went past and got the next thing. And Malcolm Donnelly said, you don't like him very much, do you? I said, not. He said, well, I didn't think much of him either. Which rather amused me. Anyway, the thing went off. It certainly amused me. It just shows you how you can, in some ways, get your own back. There was a couple of boats which were the governor's. One was a small private yacht, and the other was a sort of ex-motor, not motor torpedo boat, but air rescue boat, very fast. I've got a photograph of it here, actually, which I'll show you in a moment. And so I used to organise parties to certain islands where there were either turtles or particular attractive birds or, again, features of the corral. I mean, it is the most beautiful, the beaches and things there, and the coral is unbelievable. And on this occasion, we only had a couple of small dinghies, so these people were rowed ashore. We had various women. There must have been 20, 30 people there, and we'd got a barbecue on the beach and that sort of thing. And when it was more or less time to go, obviously the boats were too limited. So I suggested that, you know, perhaps we'd swim back to the boat so that save time, which wasn't that far off the shore anyway, and the sea was calm. And Sir Andrew Clark and I and one of the helpers swam, and we got on board the boat up a ladder that was at the side of the boat. Sir Andrew Clark went to get a towel or something else, and Calder was swimming out after us, but they much slower. So I looked round quickly and hitched up the ladder much higher so that he couldn't get on it so easily. As I turned round, I saw Andrew Clark looking at me in a very strange way. He'd obviously seen me do it. Anyway, Calder came to think, and of course he had great difficulty in getting up, and Andrew Clark and I put a hand up, and of course he kept slipping back into the water. So anyway, I dived in to make sure that he was all right. And I said to him, I think it might be an idea if we lowered the ladder a bit. He, with a quiet smile on his face, we lowered the ladder. But it intrigued me. Here was this senior man, saw me obviously do it, but did nothing to correct the thing. But this country and the beautiful beaches and the various islands around the place, well, I think was of great interest. Another incident that I think is worth watching. Again, after one of these conferences, which happened sort of fairly regularly, Malcolm McDonald was there, certainly Andrew Clark, Ron Clan, we had a meeting, and the short Sunderland flying boat had landed in the harbour and was on mooring right there. And we'd gone down and were taking the launch out to the boat. But at that particular time, a very large naval, it's not a landing craft in the sense that, you know, the little ones, this was where the bow comes down and everything else.
A landing ship.
A landing ship. Mm. And with a huge broadside, terribly unmaneuverable.
Would that have been a landing ship tank, do you think?
Well, yes, a landing ship tank. I mean, it is 30,000. I mean, it's a large boat and very unwieldy. In the harbour, it wasn't that big. It's very deep, ideal. The ports around the coast were ideal. Mm. But it wasn't terribly manoeuvrable. And it was drifting towards this flying boat, where I just virtually got the people aboard and saying, well, you know, you better try and taxi off. In the meantime, it's getting closer and closer, and the captain of the boat with the bridge comes out, so he's got over. And he said, get that fucking stupid bloody coming out of the bloody way. And, ah, oh, but what the hell do you think? Can't you see I'm doing this? Anyway, governor called a hold of this, and he went blue with rage. The pilot managed to get the plane started and was motoring away. I was still with on board the, on the platform, on the where they had a platform coming into the boat. And the governor said, I want that man dismissed the service. He's endangered the lives of the most important men in Asia. And I, you know, what a rearhead. He should be rearhead. Send a message to the Admiralty immediately, you see. So I then, they then, having the safe distance, I then got back on the launch and came back. So I went back to Government House and composed a message to the Admiralty, which I had no intention of sending off. But it couched in sort of, you know, you have incurred the wrath and so, and he wants an, you know, you to be initially dismissed the service and so forth and so on. So I got all my ADC gear on and epaulet and everything else. And Julie went out to the ship after the sea. Captain saying, and told his whoever the ensign was, who I was. But I had to wait about half an hour, three quarters of an hour, which I thought was a bit rude to the government of the day. So anyway, he said, well, you know, what do you want? So I said, well, I think by the end of the you'll be wanting something. He said, what do you mean? So I handed him this message, and he literally went pale. I said, do you realize who was on that boat that you shouted at? And I said, I heard every word you said. I think it's pretty disgraceful behavior, if you don't mind me saying so. And he then was getting quite worried. So he said, well, you know, this is terrible. I said, well, hold on a minute. I might be able to help you. I said, but it's going to cost you. I said, I don't know how much, but I mean, one of the first things you've got to do, you'll have to arrange a huge party on board. I wanted something else done to the race course. I want a work party to do this and so forth. So I'd already worked out of various things to do. And I said, I will try and get this thing modified. In fact, I might not send it in this thing either. So I rather enjoyed this. And also, by the way, I'd like a bottle of gin from the. So he was only too willing to cooperate. However, I did give him the use of my jeep at this particular stage, but he became extremely friendly, and during the governor's absence, he insisted on entertaining me on every occasion.
How was the matter resolved eventually?
Well, I said nothing, because, I mean, quite honestly, I knew Calder so well. And when he eventually came back, and he came back when the bloke was still there, and I said, you just can't ruin. We'd had one or two, Calder and I had one or two about sort of these sort of things before, maybe treatment of what. And I said, you really can't ruin a man's service. I said, it was, as far as he was concerned, he was concerned that he was endangering your what's-name, and he was in a position where the boat could not be manoeuvred, so that you just understand it was his anxiousness that caused this particular problem. In any case, he's invited the whole staff up for this, that, and the other. We've arranged another race meeting, and he's reduced a lot of drink for the, and you know they're going to do a special exhibition of naval parades and that sort of thing. So it was placated, but it was certainly quite an amusing incident.
What sort of